Chapter 3. Bread. It had begun raining before Trent had even woken up. By the time he leaves the hotel, it's truly coming down. That, combined with the humidity of an English July, means that Trent's hair is already starting to frizz by the time he reaches the set. Isaac takes one look at him and makes a face. Hair up today, I think. It's not that bad, except that it will be. Even as a kid, before he grew his hair out, it had a tendency to expand. So Trent sits back and lets Isaac work his magic. Isaac is almost as inscrutable as Beard, especially when he has a brush in his hand, but the man is efficient. Besides, at this point in the morning, Trent would rather not chat. Thank God Keely is still in her trailer. Well, someone's looking handsome. Speak of the devil. Keely swings herself into the open chair next to him. Very appropriate for Bread Week, since you are the king of bread. You're going to give all the middle-aged women watching all sorts of naughty dreams. And the middle-aged men, too. Equal opportunity and all that. She winks at him. You sound like my agent. He doesn't mean it as a compliment. You should do a bun, not a ponytail. Go for that hot hipster professor vibe. Play off the glasses and rolled up sleeves and all that, Keely tells Isaac, completely ignoring Trent. Expertise, but make it sexy. You heard her, bruv. And Trent, you should take your glasses off when you're expecting their bakes and do that thing with your mouth, that pinched thing. Trent is not going to ask. You're doing it right now! If Trent did not have someone else's hands in his hair, he would have walked away from this ridiculous conversation then and there. He stays in the chair. If he ignores them, maybe they'll stop. And Isaac is doing something with product to his scalp that does feel truly incredible, which almost balances out Keely's giggles. As soon as that's done, though, Trent is getting up and locking himself in his trailer until he's called for filming. When he makes it to his trailer, Trent realizes that he has, without fully meaning to, rolled his sleeves up, just like Keely suggested. He leaves them like that. Bread Week smells like two things, yeast and nerves. The second is aimed at him. Trent has made a name for himself off of bread, and every one of the bakers knows it, if they did their research, and if they are in this tent, they definitely did do their research. He's always loved making bread. The meditative feeling of kneading the dough, the epiphany of if the crumb structure had worked. It's as close to a science as Trent's been able to master, and as a result, he has certain expectations that must be met. A stuffed loaf is the perfect way to check those expectations. There are so many things that the bakers will have to balance to make sure that the bread turns out correctly. If a baker pulls it off, well, it'll be nothing short of fantastic. If they don't? Luckily, most of the crew don't have tastes quite as discerning as Trent and Rebecca. It takes more time than usual to film the talking heads. The wind has picked up a bit, and they have to move twice to avoid getting hit by the rain. As a result, when he and Rebecca return to the tent, all the bakers are deep in their work. They go to Roy Kent first. They've already learned that if they don't talk to him early, it's impossible to get anything out of him, due to his level of focus. Even if they intercept him early, it can still be difficult. Challenging him works best, but that also means having Roy look at Trent with nothing short of murder in his eyes, and Trent is pretty sure that the workplace insurance is not that good. Roy is already kneading his dough. So, what you making this week, Roy? Oh, and having Keeley be the host to talk to Roy also helps. When it had been Beard, the silence had been excruciating. Roasted garlic, spicy tomato compote, and goat cheese. Roy doesn't stop kneading as he speaks. He has a rhythm that even Trent envies, each pull the exact same length, each fold neat and even. "Careful, Gramps! We don't want you straining your back," Jamie calls out. It's probably too late to move their stations. Putting Jamie right behind Roy was a mistake, although how were they to know that? Still, they don't want any brawls. They're not Jeremy Kyle, for God's sake. Roy's shoulders are tight, but all he does is slap the bread dough down again, a bit harder this time. "How long are you proofing your dough?" Trent asks, partially out of curiosity, partially to distract from any possibility of violence. 1 hour 15. "And in the proofing drawer?" "It has better temperature control. I'd be an idiot not. I'm not a friggin' idiot." No, he is not. Rebecca steps in, asking a question about the garlic. It's pre-roasted, and he used a chili-infused olive oil. After a pause, Roy offers them both a piece. It's going to be on Trent's breath for hours, but it's worth it. Jamie's next. He's also working his dough, throwing it down even more vigorously than Roy was. If he's not careful, it'll be overworked. Trent doesn't say anything. "Hey, Jamie." Jamie winks at Keeley. He winks at Rebecca, who stares back. He does not wink at Trent. "It's going to be like a jalapeno popper, yeah?" "I'm not familiar with that food," Rebecca says after a silence. Trent has never had a jalapeno popper before, but he's seen them before. In the frozen food aisle, Rory has terrible taste and even worse eating habits, one of the many reasons it did not work between them. "Seriously? My old flatmate told me about them. They're right sound."
"And what are they?"
"These peppers stuffed with cheese and fried. So what I'm doing is a bunch of the peppers, the jalapenos, yeah, and this special cheese, and a chili dipping sauce." Trent isn't sure if that sounds good or horrifying. He decides to respond with a, hopefully diplomatic, "I'm curious to see how that'll turn out." As they walk away, Trent's pretty sure that he can see Jamie fist pump. "No, that loaf is going to be horrifying." Both Will and Nate's loaves involve chocolate. At that news, Nate lets out a mumbled something that sounds a lot like "that dick." Shannon is doing prosciutto and pear and blue cheese, and Keeley steals a massive piece of prosciutto during the conversation. When they reach Ted's bench, he's already holding out a bowl for them. Keeley takes it without a word. "Does this mean we should be completely psyched for what you have planned?" "If you like cinnamon rolls, yes, ma'am." And Ted is off, telling them a story about how his family made cinnamon rolls from a can every year for Christmas when he was a child, and how his first year in England, he and his wife, and had he cleared his throat a little bit before saying that bit, had gone to 7 different supermarkets before accepting that the canned cinnamon roll brand they were used to were not a thing over here, and that they were just going to have to make them from scratch. The entire time he spoke, his hands were moving, making some sort of pattern in the air. "Anyways, The frosting is the traditional cream cheese one, but I actually subbed coconut milk for the milk. Turns out it makes it a bit richer. Who knew a fruit could do that? It's fantastic. Keely is licking one of her fingers. If I could judge, I'd give you 10s all around. Okay, give it back before I don't have any left. The two play tussle for the bowl, with Keely holding it over her head and Ted pretending like he can't reach it, even though he's taller than her, even with her heels. It'll make great television. As it turns out, the special cheese that Jamie was referring to is a mix of extremely processed cheddar cheese and cream cheese. Trent hates that he doesn't hate it. The tricky thing about the baguette recipe that Trent's given the bakers for the blind bake is that they should knead the dough for as little as possible, no more than a minute, if possible. If they knead for the usual amount of time for a baguette, the dough will become amazingly overworked. But Trent made sure the recipe didn't include any information for how long to knead for. It's all about instinct. And that is what this particular challenge is about, isn't it? It's so cruel of you, Rebecca says, after Trent has explained his reasoning to her. We want to see what they know. It's a perfect test. It doesn't mean that it's not devilishly mean, but that's the point, isn't it? Trent neither confirms nor denies, just eats another piece of the baguette that they had used in the segment they'd just filmed. Roy Kent, during that judging round, there was an actual smile on his face for a minute there. Well, it's not every day that Trent Krim gives you the handshake during a bread week. And you did say you'd like the recipe. High praise coming from the bread king. Did Keely tell you that nickname, or did you come up with it yourself? Rebecca just smirks at him. Trent is going to have words with Keely, although telling her to not might just encourage her. The last thing that Trent needs is for Keely Jones to tell the contestants to call him the King of Bread or something equally ridiculous. He takes another bite of the baguette and starts brainstorming possible nicknames for Rebecca to pass along to Keely. The blind bake ends up being an utter massacre. Trent is not entirely surprised, but he is willing to admit that he is disappointed. The proportions of the ingredients should have been a hint. Even if that wasn't enough, the fact that there was only a single proof, not two, should have alerted all the bakers that something was up. And yet, loaf after loaf that he and Rebecca bit into were tough. He envied the crew who would be responsible for getting rid of them all. Only three had a crumb structure that Trent would consider remotely suitable. After the fourth, completely unsatisfactory piece, Trent wants to pull his glasses off, run his hand through his hair, and launch into a moderately blistering lecture about the basic fundamentals of baking bread, except that, one, this isn't that sort of show, and two, his hair's basically hairsprayed into its bun. He has to content himself with a long sigh and a not our finest effort this week, and see how most of the bakers didn't meet his eyes. Ultimately, Will's baguette is at the bottom, both overly kneaded and overproofed. Sam's is at the top, but as Trent reminds all the bakers, it's a close thing. None of them were particularly good that week. They all need to step up their game. It does not bode well for tomorrow. The weather, somehow, is even worse for Saturday's filming. So windy that the rain is truly blowing sideways, the sky a lovely, sickly shade of gray. Trent immediately regrets rolling his sleeves up yesterday, because he's going to have to do that today for continuity, and he'd like to keep every inch of skin covered for the sake of staying warm, thanks, but it's a bit too late for that. To make things even worse, on the way to his trailer, he steps in a puddle, and his left shoe gets soaked through. His toes are going to be clammy all day, he can just tell. He really does hate living in England sometimes. Everything is a little bit off from the start. The weather complicates things for the camera crew, so they're running almost an hour behind schedule by the time the bakers are needed due to the need to move around everything so equipment doesn't get all wet. Everyone, even Rebecca, looks just a little bit limp. Higgins even snaps at a production assistant at one point. Yes, the rain is impacting them all. Trent doesn't want to begin to think about the effect that the damp is going to have on the yeast. Today's skill showcases, braided bread centerpiece, two different sorts of flour, 4 hours, are going to be all over the place, and there really isn't anything anyone can do about it. The contestants are clearly on edge as he and Rebecca go on their walkthrough. Colin keeps glancing at him as if Trent is going to bite his head off. And look, it's not that Trent is being purposefully mean today, but he also isn't pulling any punches the way he was for Biscuit Week. No, not during Bread Week. The questions he asks each baker are deliberate, specific, pointed. Most struggle through answering them. Trent lets them dangle in the silence. His left eyebrow aches from being quirked up. By the end of the circuit, he's already fairly sure who is going home. Will, using whole wheat flour for a challenge that is this fiddly, is not a good choice, although the top finisher is still wide open. Unlike other weeks, Trent allows himself to stay in the tent for a while, to watch the bakers, to see what they manage to do. There's always the possibility of surprise. And there is a surprise. Two, actually. Trent is circling Florence, watching her prepare an egg wash, when he hears a yell. "Damn it!" It's Nate, and before Trent can blink, he's up in Will's face. There's a broken bowl of dough on the ground. Trent is willing to bet what happened, and he's hoping that's not the case. "I honestly didn't see it when I was..." "You fucking clumsy dickhead!" Nate's face is bright red, and Will looks genuinely distressed. Trent's wondering how, if he should intervene, but two of the PAs are stepping in, which is just as well. They have actual training. And Keely's there too, reminding Nate that he can start again. "It's just dough. It's totally okay, babes." "If my bake is messed up because of him..." Before Nate can get out the rest of whatever is on his mind, Keely is handing him to Beard. Beard is oddly good at talking bakers down off ledges. Still, Trent will avoid Nate's bench for the rest of the afternoon if he can help it. He's listening to Sam rattle off a series of increasingly complicated questions about the biology of yeast that he cannot answer because it's technically against the rules, and Trent knows virtually nothing about the biology of yeast, when he notices something out of the corner of his eye, and he glances to the left. Somehow, as he's bent down to check on his proof, Ted's shirt has ridden up. A stripe of his back is visible, no more than an inch. Ted closes the proofing drawer, straightens up. The shirt falls back in place. Trent turns his attention back to Sam, who is now talking about enzymes. Still, he can't help but look over at Ted once more. He's leaning against his bench, drinking some water. Nothing to see there. When it comes time for judging, the look on Nate's face is virtually a pout, something that Trent has a lot of experience with, thanks to his daughter. He gets complimented on the use of chipotle pepper and olives as flavoring in two of the loaves, but both Trent and Rebecca have to ding him for the overall structure. It's not because of the bowl incident. Half of the loaves were overproofed, oddly enough. When it's all done, Nate walks back to his bench with a loud sigh. He's not actually in danger of going home. Neither of their feedback was that harsh. Trent wants to point that out. This experience, if anything, should be a teachable moment. He doesn't think it will be. Trent notices the smile on Nate's face at the devastation that are Will's loaves. The whole wheat flour was a mistake, and the younger baker should have realized that during a test bake. But the idea of another baker taking glee in someone's mistake? It just doesn't sit right with Trent. He should have been harsher with Nate. The thought is vaguely bouncing around the back of his mind when Keely announces that the winning baker for the week is Roy. Almost as one, everyone looks to Roy to see how he'll react. Roy's eyebrows furrow, and Trent prepares for something caustic that will have to be bleeped out because this show runs on the Beeb, not ITV. But instead, Roy Kent's face breaks into a grin, and it's such a surprise, so unsettling, that Trent's more afraid than if Roy had thrown a chair at one of the PAs. And then Ted leans over and gives Roy a slap on the back, and it's like a dam has been lifted and all the other bakers are on him. The communal glee abates when Beard announces that, yes, Will is going home. No surprise there. All except for Nate, who is still grinning, looking smugger than Trent has ever seen a non-winning baker look before. He'll need to keep an eye out for him, won't he? Before Trent can go over to Will, tell him that he shouldn't take it too personally, walk him through the issues of using whole wheat flour, and give him some advice to ensure that he isn't scared off of making bread for life, Ted is there, wrapping an arm around his shoulders and saying something that makes Will smile. Ted looks over at Trent and mouths something. Trent has no idea what it's meant to be. Is he supposed to be a lip reader now? Ted gives him a thumbs up. Will, Trent decides, is probably in just fine hands. Back at the hotel that evening, Trent pours himself a double shot of scotch from the minibar. He can expense it to production, and FaceTimes Kieran. It's late enough that she isn't hyper, and early enough that she still has the energy to focus on him for a few minutes. After she shows him all the paintings she's done over the weekend and has recounted the plot of Frozen, Rory sticks his head in. Trent is, frankly, too exhausted to do the small talk, song, and dance with him, and his drink is waiting, so the conversation is short. Any bakers I should be excited for? A year ago, Trent would have told him to fuck off, but their relationship has moved past the point of swearing at each other. There's a Welsh one you'll love. Completely your type. Cute? Stupid. That's unfair to Colin, but the look on Rory's face is worth it. Do you have any favorites yet? I'm not at liberty to say. The conversation dies out after that, as so many of the conversations did in the months before they split up. Hanging up the phone and turning to his scotch feels like a relief. Drinking alone in a hotel room at his age is a bit of a cliché, and he knows it. But the scotch was a single malt, and since Trent's shoe had never quite dried out over the day, he deserves it. The scotch is smoky on his tongue, and as he swallows, he can taste peat. He allows himself a second glass, and he must be more tired than he thought, because every time he shuts his eyes, all he can see is Ted Lasso bending over the proofing drawer and the stripe of his skin, how pale it was against the blue shirt he'd been wearing. Trent wishes he could say that after he finished that second glass of scotch, he had a glass of water and two aspirin and went straight to sleep. That would be a lie. Chapter 4. Vegan. Is it wrong that I had bacon at breakfast this morning? Rebecca asks as they walk to the tent. Trent wants to tell her, yes, of course it is, how dare she, but he had done the exact same. He has nothing against vegans or vegan food in general. He's always found those people who rage against the concept of eating plant-based exceedingly tiresome. After all, hasn't everyone had a meal of just pasta and red sauce at least once in their lives? Hell, Trent's gone through multiple weeks without meat just, well, because. But baking is different. There is something about the combination of eggs and butter and milk that just can't be replicated. Of course, that's why Higgins had been so giddy to throw a vegan week at the baker's so early in the game. Trent would have preferred another bread week. He's not looking forward to a weekend of nut milks and crumbly bakes due to a lack of butter. However, it's the job he signed up for. He longs for bread week already. There will be no bread this week. Higgins had raised the possibility of vegan pumpernickel for the blind bake challenge, but there are lines that Trent absolutely refuses to cross, and that was one of them. And so, they are back, largely to desserts. Rebecca will just have to take the wheel, yet again. The first challenge for the week is a dozen tarts of any flavor, sweet or savory, as long as they are 100% vegan. At least, Trent tells himself, as Keeley hypes up the entire concept to a camera, there's no rain this weekend. The weather is as near to ideal as possible. It's a relief after the last round of shooting. Given the inherent challenges of baking vegan, the bakers will need every extra bit of help that they can get. Rebecca and Trent go to Colin's station first. As they approach, Trent thinks back to the comment he'd made about Colin to his ex. It was harsh. Colin, from the little interaction Trent has had with him, because he just doesn't have that much interaction with any of the bakers, to be honest, seems bright enough, even if he hasn't done much to distinguish himself from the other contestants thus far. But he's grating some ginger and gives them a big grin. "I'm real excited for this week," he says, before any of them, Rebecca, Trent, or Keeley, can say anything. "My mom can't have dairy, so most of my bakes for her are vegan already, so I shouldn't screw this up too badly like the other ones, right?" An odd statement, since he hasn't really done terribly on any of the challenges so far. He won the first week's blind bake, after all. "We're looking forward to your expertise, then," Rebecca murmurs. Colin's face looks utterly panicked. "It smells amazing already." Even with Keeley's attempt at switching gears, the look on his face doesn't change. "So, what's it going to be, Colin?" "Peach pear juniper tart with almond flour crust." Trent can't help it. His left eyebrow has arched right up at the mention of juniper. It's just an unusual element in a sweet bake. "Juniper can sometimes be rather medicinal, don't you think? How are you going to avoid that?" he asks. Colin doesn't have an answer. He just stares at Trent until Rebecca takes pity on him and asks a question about how he'll be integrating the ginger into his bake. Florence's bench is next to Colin's, so it makes sense to go to her next. Not that they have to go by bench order, of course. Trent still refuses to refer to her as sassy. Whatever she's making, it's purple. Trent can tell it's going to be a long day. So far, all the tart crusts are so crumbly that they're nearly falling apart as soon as Trent and Rebecca so much as look at them. Rebecca has crumbs on her collar. Trent doesn't bother to help her brush them off. May's berry and lemon filling had been the best so far, even if the bottom had essentially collapsed before either of them could take a bite. And next is Collins. He's standing stiller than Trent has ever seen him before, which is either a good sign or a terrible omen. Plum, peach, and juniper compote, he reminds them. His voice is as flat as a Welsh accent can be, with a ginger and almond flour crust. Enjoy. Colin's nerves, Trent realizes with his first bite, were completely misplaced, as were his own uncertainties about the tarts to begin with. The juniper in this is less like pine needles and more of a subtle citrus. And, more importantly, it's the first tart where the crust doesn't leave him wanting a glass of water. You should be very proud of yourself, he tells Colin. He means it. The ginger showed some excellent instincts, especially offset with the juniper. And remind me of what's in this? Rebecca is holding one of the shot glasses that Colin had set out. He perks right up, even more than he had at Trent's compliment. Trent tries not to be offended. It's a homemade ginger-infused gin. Family recipe, yeah? The lilt is back in Colin's voice. Trent passes on that. Thank you very much. Unlike Rebecca, he has never developed a taste for gin. She seems to enjoy it. Good for her. Both Florence's and Roy's crusts are passable. So, Ted, tart. Talk. Beard is truly excellent at getting straight to the point. I think y'all will enjoy this one. It's a dark chocolate and espresso tart with a crunchy oatmeal crust. Trent takes a bite of Ted's tart. Yet again, the crust isn't quite right. If Trent were in a less forgiving mood, he'd describe it as sandpapery. It's easy enough to overlook that, though, when his taste buds hit the filling. Ted had described it during the walkthroughs as being like a mocha one would buy at an extremely upscale restaurant, and, well, he's not wrong. The first thing he notices is the espresso, and then the heavy richness of the dark chocolate. It should be bitter, but there's a hint of sweetness, agave maybe, that pulls it just short of that edge. Your crust needed some work, Trent says. A bit more oil would have solved things there. Ted's head is tilted a bit to the left, and he's just looking at him. Trent pushes himself to keep going. The mix of the espresso and the chocolate, though, it worked really... You have a bit of chocolate. Ted gestures, running his thumb along his lower lip. Right there. Trent wants to groan. He reaches up and wipes at his face. His fingers come away almost completely clean. A little to the left. You almost had it. Ted sounds cheerful. Not at all like Trent is about to humiliate himself on television. At least, he tells himself, it isn't live. That's a small consolation, though. He rubs at the spot that Ted had motioned at, hoping that he got it. Now that he thinks about it, he really should have gotten his fingers wet. That would have been a more effective way of getting the chocolate off his face, but Trent didn't much fancy the concept of licking his fingers on camera. It just seemed not particularly his style. Is it off? Ted leans forward a little, as if he is taking this whole thing incredibly seriously. Except that, as always, he's smiling. It's a smile that Trent hasn't seen before. Not that he has been keeping track of Ted's smiles, because that would be ridiculous. It's just that Ted Lasso has a very distinctive smile. That's all. It's not the wide grin that's on his face 99% of the time, or the smaller smile he'd flashed when talking about his son. It's a... if Trent had to describe it, he supposes he'd call it fond. He's not sure if he wants Ted to say yes or no. "You got it," he says. "All gone." Trent wonders what he would have done if there was still chocolate left. He knows it's a stupid thought. No point in thinking about hypotheticals. Now that they've established that Trent's face is bare of chocolate, Rebecca is able to give her feedback. Trent thinks she was a little too enthusiastic about the use of oats in the tart crust, but criticizing Rebecca is not his job. When Ted's done, Beard snags a tart for himself, and they all laugh. The laughter does fade a little as Shannon steps forward with her bedraggled caramelized onion tarts. As soon as there's a break in filming, the first thing Trent does is check his face in a mirror. Ted was right. Not a speck of chocolate. The bakers are off doing their blind bake, having the less than enviable task of making 8 vegan sticky toffee puddings, when Sharon finds Trent. It is truly unfortunate timing. She has a look on her face that says she wants to have a conversation. He's just sat down for his lunch, curry and papadoms, which the on-set caterers actually do quite well. Trent's not sure why Sharon wants to talk to him. He's been on his best behavior so far this series, so much better than last year. He made a contestant cry on the first day of filming last year. This year? Trent doesn't like to brag, but he thinks he's done a pretty excellent job of balancing out giving genuine criticism and judgment with an air of being helpful. He doesn't want to be a complete asshole, after all. In his taped talking heads with Sharon, he's maintained that whole attitude as well. He hasn't even called Jamie Tart a prick who needs to stop acting like he's better than the rest of the bakers, even though his technique is the best so far. But it has been a near thing. He gives Sharon a nod and takes a bite of papadom. "So," she begins, never a good sign, "Ted Lasso. What about him?" Trent honestly does not know what Sharon could be on about, and that's what scares him a little. He had given a less than flattering description of the man during the first week of the competition, but he feels like his subsequent evaluations have countered that, has made it clear that he's been nothing but fair, just like he is to all of the contestants. The only thing he can think of that could be an issue was the whole asking Ted to box him up some of the biscuits in week 2, but Trent had dealt with that, hadn't he? No, he's been completely impartial. Ted Lasso isn't his favorite of the bakers because Trent would never pick favorites, but he isn't Trent's least favorite, not by a long shot. He is not going to be caught up in some tabloid drama over giving certain people an unfair advantage, because he hasn't done that at all. He considers how to explain all that to Sharon, how to phrase it in a way that doesn't make him sound overly defensive, because he's not. Is there something wrong with how I've been conducting my critiques of his bakes? He decides on. The day I have an issue with your judging is the day that the sun freezes over, Sharon tells him. She has a puzzled look on her face. Did someone say that there was an issue? No. No one had. But even if they had, he isn't quite sure that he'd trust Sharon to keep her mouth shut. Sure, there are professional ethics and all that, but one never knows. Sharon takes a sip of her tea. Trent waits for clarity. She takes another sip of her tea. Trent eats another poppadom. Have you noticed Ted reacting to the show in an unexpected way? It was now Trent's turn to stare at Sharon. That is a completely new question from her, whether or not cameras are present. Besides the fact that he's consistently cheerful about what we throw at them? If you consider that normal, then no. Sharon lets out a soft noise of agreement. If you notice anything, let me know. Sharon gets up from the table and gives Trent one of her smiles, the one she uses when she knows that someone is bullshitting her and she knows they have a lot more to say and she's going to make them forget that a camera is on them and say it anyways. Trent is glad that the cameras are nowhere near him. Trent does not smile back at her. Do you think you can save me a pudding? She asks and walks off. Trent picks over his curry. He suddenly longs to see how the bakers are doing. The issue with a completely plant-based vegan sticky pudding toffee is that the non-dairy whipped cream will never be as good as the real thing. Trent's mouth tastes gritty, even after he drinks water. A vegan taro and coconut ice cream cake is something that Trent has never experienced. In fairness, there are a lot of things during Vegan Week that he hadn't experienced before. Some of them, Sam's spiced carrot compote, Colin's tart filling, had been excellent. Some of them, dairy-free whipped cream, are things that he had never wanted to experience ever again. Try a bite. Colin's voice is oddly insistent. Both Beard and Keeley already have, Beard surprising them all by muttering something about a love of the flavor in boba tea. Rebecca has taken a small piece, and now, if Trent doesn't, he'll look churlish or like a coward. Given the color, he's expecting more. He contents himself with an interesting. It'll be curious how you work out the texture. Really, they could be moving on to another baker. He has no further questions for Colin, and given how high he'd scored in yesterday's blind bake, neither should Rebecca. But Keeley wants to know how on earth Taro made its way to Wales, so they're all stuck standing there and nodding as Colin tells them a whole backstory and confuses himself several times along the way. As Colin talks to them, Trent tries to listen, tries to be good and do his job, but he can't help but replay his conversation with Sharon from yesterday's lunch. If you notice anything, let me know. He hasn't noticed anything. That is, it's not his job. Ted is last on their circuit for the day. It's just the way that these things work out, just the luck of the draw. With each baker, he looks over at the third bench to the left. Trent asks Shannon about her decision to use applesauce as a binding agent in her ginger cake and remains utterly unconvinced by her answer. Ted is measuring out cinnamon. Rebecca almost gets hit in the face by a piece of dark chocolate that May chopped a little bit too enthusiastically. Ted is blending dates. Trent and Rebecca drag more than 15 words in a row out of Roy, thanks to an abiding hatred of avocado oil. Ted is chatting with Sam. Nate seems unconcerned about Rebecca's questions over his use of, yet again, chai as a major flavor component in his cake. Ted is looking at a mug of tea with an expression of disgust. Sam explains his plans to make a vegan custard with such conviction that Trent is suddenly willing to try the concept. Ted is pushing some hair out of his face. There is nothing different about Ted Lasso. He doesn't know what Sharon is on about. He wants to ignore her and focus on what's in front of him. Sam's patient explanation of why he did not go with almond milk for his custard, even though that's what most of the recipes recommended. Instead, he wants to ask Rebecca or Beard or Keeley if Sharon had pulled any of them aside, had interrupted any of them eating lunch and mentioned the same thing. He wants to walk straight up to Ted, skip right past any questions about what he's been using for flavoring in his spice cake and what? Say that Sharon Fieldstone has a concern? No. If it's an actual problem, someone from the production team would have talked to Ted. It's none of Trent's business. When Colin wins the week, he almost falls off his chair, and Sam has to catch him. It was a well-deserved win. Trent is rarely willing to admit that he's wrong, but he was wrong about both the possibilities of taro and juniper berries. The bakers are possibly more exuberant about Colin's win than they were about Roy's, descending on him for hugs before his full name was out of Beard's mouth. But then again, Colin does not exude the same sort of energy as Roy. The only one who doesn't join in is Nate. And that means that the one who is going home... Keeley's pause seems genuine, not contrived for the cameras. Shannon, I'm sorry. It is truly rough to see Shannon's face fall. Trent always, deep down, roots for the youngest bakers, the ones who simply haven't had the years to develop all of their skills. Yes, they're unlikely to win, for that reason alone. Still, he can feel the sting, even if it was the right choice. Shannon's bake last week was average, and she struggled across the board this week. Nowhere more so than in her tried and true, but even her final cake wasn't at the level of the others. Most of the bakers are still clustered around Colin, so Trent approaches her first. She's frowning, staring down at her shoes with an intense determination that suggests that she might be about to cry. Trent is awful with tears. In a few years, with a bit more practice, you'll be a tremendous baker, he tells her. The hug is quick, just long enough to not feel impersonal. You think so? Yes, this is one of the parts of the job he hates, having to see the disappointment this close up. You'll be better than Rebecca. It's a lie, and they both know it, because being a better baker than Rebecca Welton would involve some level of satanic sacrifice, but Shannon laughs. So it works. I was going to check in with you, tell you to be like Ariana Grande, but it seems like it wasn't necessary. Shannon has pulled her eyes from her feet and is giving Ted a somewhat half-hearted smile, but it seems like tears may not be in the immediate future. Ariana Grande? Trent forces himself to ask, after Shannon's attention has been drawn away.
What? Oh, you know, leaving on a high note, on account of Miss Grande's whistle notes. Might have been more accurate to say Mariah Carey, I guess.
Trent wants to tell Ted that he is ridiculous. Trent wants to laugh. Trent just shakes his head and goes to tell Sam that he also had a good week, just pushed the flavors a bit more next time. He can't believe he was worrying over Ted Lasso.